Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
And I'm Jeff Jackson.
Hey, Brian. Jeff, guess what I'm looking at?
Let me guess. I don't know.
It is snowing outside my window.
You've got to be kidding me.
Nope.
It's like, April, man. It shouldn't be snowing, should it?
Well, you know, we're in New England, so that kind of stuff happens. But it's just like fluffy. Yeah. I had my yard back. All the snow had melted last week. We've had a long winter, but right now I'm looking outside my window and it looks like it'd make a great, you know, white Christmas scene.
Oh my gosh. You know what makes that so hard to swallow is for a Southern California guy, and our weather's back to normal now with all the rain and stuff has passed, but it's baseball season, man. And it's like springtime is baseball, and you just don't think of baseball and snow and cold weather. But you New Englanders, you get that even in this time of year. It's crazy.
Yeah, the Red Sox are playing their first home game today, I think. And so there's some big shindig in Boston. And I don't know if it's snowing down there. It's a couple hours south and east of us or close to the ocean. But, you know, I'm in the mountains.
Right.
And so, you know, yeah. It's not snowing everywhere in New England, but it's snowing in my yard.
Wow. That is amazing.
We're over it.
Yeah. I'll bet you guys are over it. And the spring actually means something there. It doesn't really mean that much out here. Yeah. Other than it is baseball season. And, you know, I'm a big baseball fan and my Padres are actually a fun team to watch again. They actually have turned a corner in a lot of ways. You sign a $300 million player and all of a sudden the team tends to get better.
It's wow. But they're not in San Diego anymore.
Yeah, they are. That's the Chargers you're thinking of.
Oh, yeah, the Chargers. I'm sorry.
The Padres.
Yeah. I forgot Chargers aren't. All right. Yeah. My bad. I was a huge Padres fan when I was a kid. I saw my first Padre games ever. I saw Hank Aaron play. Mm. And I was in Cub Scouts at the time. It was Cub Scout night. And Hank Aaron was playing for Milwaukee at the time. It was before he went to Atlanta. So a lot of people don't know who Hank Aaron is.
No, they don't. It's a whole different generation. Yep. Whole different world. Yeah.
Well, that's it. It was talking about, this isn't a good segue, but.
It's okay. Actually, it is a good segue because, like, for me, when I used to come back on furlough, we would always come in April and May when the kids were out of school, and then always catch a Padre game. So that was one of the ways that you know, I like to get refreshed is go and see my team while I'm back in the States on a furlough.
Well, thanks for saving my segue because my segue was horrendous.
Yeah, well, that's what we do here. You know, we save people. We try to get people saved. So
nice.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, that reminds me when I was in the Army where I was stationed at overseas. And this some people may think this is a little sacrilegious, but on the bathroom wall in the where I worked at on base in Misawa, Japan, on the bathroom wall, somebody had written Jesus saves. And in those days, it was, you know, the NHL, one of the best players, but was a guy named Phil Esposito. Probably a lot of people never heard that name. But anyway, somebody had written on the bathroom wall, Jesus saves. And then somebody had written in underneath that, but Esposito rebounds and scores.
Oh, man.
That was pretty classic. Yeah. So anyway. So, yeah, we're talking about furloughs. Let's wrap up this two-part series on this important subject, right? That time of year. It is that time of year.
Right. So, Jeff, where we left off, I don't know if you want to pick it up where we left off, but I was thinking about this very specifically because we had a technical malfunction and we had to, you know, we were talking about something cool at the time. But what we were talking about, you had come back on furlough and you had been invited somewhere by some people you would never normally connect with. They were kind of outside of your social circle.
Mm-hmm.
And the thinking was at the time that when missionaries come back on furlough, it gives the body of Christ a real opportunity to, you know, function in a way that they don't normally get to function until a missionary's around, but God's called them to do that. That was kind of the thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember that specific point that I was trying to make at the time, but yeah, there is sort of this, and I think it needs to be always framed in this way. The idea of a furlough, clearly, you know, you're trying to benefit the missionary, giving them a break from the field, reconnecting them, you know, with their home culture, reconnecting them with their donors, which maybe we'll talk a little bit about in a few minutes. But a lot of times what we miss is the reciprocal value of people who are living life, you know, important lives, day in, day out, you know, doing the job, doing the grind, and in fellowship or in, you know, whatever, in fellowship with a local church, serving in their local community or whatever. And there's a great value in those people hearing, you know, face to face from what God's doing through somebody that gave all that up and moved to the other side of the world, you know, for his kingdom. And so there's always, you know, God's just set up this sort of the structure within creation of interdependency, of reciprocity, you might say. And I think furloughs are a great opportunity. And I think for churches and church leaders to recognize the value of their missionaries being on furlough, not just for the good of the missionary, but what it does for their body and the members of their church, I think is just really important for leaders to wrap their minds around.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's just people get stretched into different areas that they just wouldn't in their regular workaday lives have the opportunity to stretch into.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And so, but again, one of the things that has to happen, and I think we hinted at this in the last podcast we did was the idea that a lot of people sort of then take their day-to-day life and the day-to-day grind of just, you know, living as they do. And they sort of project that onto the missionary and they think it's, well, pretty much the same. And when they do that, what happens is then they view the missionary as, you know, coming back on furlough. They view it primarily the way they think of their own vacation.
Right.
And a furlough is much more than a vacation. It includes decompression, disconnection, sort of, you know, that kind of thing. But a furlough has other purposes besides that. And I think the people in the local church need to be informed or educated, equipped to understand that, yes, there is that vacation facet of a furlough, but it's much more than that. And here are the reasons why.
Well, and the thing too is like when a missionary's on a furlough, you know, it's not like, you know, most missionaries have a home to go back to.
Right.
You know, and depending on what their missions agency or their church has set up for them, they're living out of a suitcase and backpacks mm-hmm. as a family.
Yes.
From every single day.
That's right.
And every single day they're a guest in somebody else's home. And so for them, it's not a rest. They always have to be on. They always have to be polite. They always have mm-hmm. to, you know, talk nice to their kids, you know, discipline their kids nicely.
Right.
You know, I mean, they are constantly on. They're not going to have anything that looks like a vacation until they get back to the mission field.
Yeah, but unless they've planned it for like, you know, a couple of weeks vacation block of the furlough, and usually that happens. I think the ones that do that most successfully, or the furloughs that are most successful, I'd say, are the ones that you know, like say their first 2 weeks back, they're, you know, they get a cabin, they go somewhere where they can just decompress from the field, just them and their family together, just relaxing, sleeping late, adjusting to jet lag, not having to answer a million questions and the hustle and bustle of changing one place to another place, you know, after a couple of days, all those kind of things. So to have that vacation portion scheduled at the front, their arrival of their furlough is, I think, the best way to go. And yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that that first furlough is always a stickler. I've been doing some research for a blog post we're going to post later this week. And, and it's like most of the articles are about my first missionary furlough. Boy, was I in for a shock.
Yes.
And I know that on our very first missionary furlough, it was really cool because our church, it coincided with a staff retreat that our church did where they had intentional downtime for the staff. And we were invited to go on that. And it worked because we were former staff of that church. Mm-hmm. And man, that was awesome. And then in the in-between times, because, you know, we were kind of on furlough in California, but visiting Florida, they had set us up in somebody's empty condo, kind of. So it's kind of like a timeshare situation, but it was phenomenal missionary care that my home church provided for us on that first furlough. We didn't even know how bad we were going to need it.
Right. Yeah. And that's again, you know, the paradigm that our ministry exists in is the idea that, you know, that the local church is the primary vehicle that God wants to reach the nations. And so even your comment a few minutes ago about, you know, when a missionary comes back, you know, that hopefully, you know, their agency or their home church is going to, you know, provide for a place for them to stay and maybe a vehicle to drive or whatever. It's just, yeah, I mean, I think biblically that's what the home church is for. It's your home church. It's your family. Yeah. And so if they're equipped and they understand what the needs are and they put the word out, I mean, it's just crazy to me that missionaries would have to spend any of their support to rent a car while they're in the States or to pay for a hotel or whatever, that the members of a church, even a small church, 40 or 50 people, have enough resources to take care of their missionaries when they come back. And usually those small churches do it better in many ways than the bigger churches, because in the bigger churches, everybody thinks somebody else is doing it.
And yeah, that's church, true.
Everybody knows, you know.
Yeah, as you were saying that, I was thinking of a couple of different experiences I've had being part of being on a big church staff and then also being on a small church staff in the role of missionary pastor. And on the big church staff, it's like, you know, the tough thing was it took a lot of infrastructure because all the missionaries came home and we had, you know, double digits of families at the big church of folks on the mission field. And a lot of them came back at the same time. Well, we provided like a missionary retreat for them, but it was, they also on their end had to make sure that they, you know, had set up a missionary care team and things like that so that they had those needs provided for. And some missionaries do it better than others.
Yes, they do. And that's what you're looking for, you know, or one of the things that we as a ministry try to equip our churches that we serve with is hey, yeah, there's a value in having a small team of people of your church members. Hopefully if it's a missionary that we start serving a missionary pre-field where they're on and before they head for the field, they're going to build this care team, practical care team. And one of the areas that a local church member can serve on that care team is in the reentry or the furlough function.
Yeah.
So that, you know, so the missionary on the field saying, hey, this is when I'm going to be in town, you know, and they got an advocate back here that's helping. If they don't have a place to stay already, that's helping them, you know, find a place to stay, finding the car for them, you know, getting tickets to Disneyland or, you know, some entertainment kind of thing set up from the members of the body. All that stuff is just really cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I want to, you know, I want to unpack a little bit further, even that whole idea of like, it's a vacation, but it's more than a vacation. And I think it's helpful to remind people about, you know, that being a missionary is a unique calling. And it requires a level of sacrifice and self-denial, a willingness to pick up stakes and disconnect from everything familiar, comfortable, including family and so forth. And so, you know, so just when trying to help people understand why missionaries need more than a 2-week vacation like you do at work, you know, here's, you know, they got to understand, hey, look, they're doing work. I mean, God's given them a work to do, but it's in another country.
Right.
And it's among people that whose language and culture is radically different from their own. And so they're living in a stress-filled environment. I mean, you have stress at work. Everybody's got stress at work, but it's stress that's in your language, where you're right. not wondering what the culture is. You're not wondering, how do I process this thought that I have and put it into another language so that it can be understood? So that idea of being immersed every day in a different culture, that coupled with just the fact that the work God's called you to wears you out, then when you layer what we call culture stress, that reality of living day in, day out, moment to moment in that culture, the combination of those things requires or forces somebody to need breaks at a level that you just don't normally do here in America.
Well, man, I just think of, just living in a developing country with, you know, some of the crime and being an American, how people are watching you and you're always having to think about security and you are constantly on.
Vigilance. Yeah.
Constantly vigilant. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing, you know, a lot of people don't think about is, you know, when you're on the other side of the world, a lot of life events and family take place back here that you no longer participate in.
Right.
You know, and I mean, they could be big events, maybe a wedding or something, or certainly the death of maybe an extended family member or whatever. But that disconnection from the life events of family members is a big deal. And you know what else is too? And this kind of, again, helping the regular church member to understand this is that, you know, missionaries, they live in a constant state of dependence on God to supply their financial needs.
Yeah, they do.
Through churches and individual brothers and sisters. There's stress in and of that, you know? And it's that dilemma of, hey, God's called me to do something that requires me to depend on the body of Christ financially and for the other resources I'll need to accomplish that. And that so is opposite of our culture. Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, you know, chart your own course culture. That's as stressful also.
You know, a lot of us are, you know, thinking we're pulling ourselves up by our own bootstraps and charting our own course, but we don't have to think about our paycheck every couple of weeks because it's the same every, you know, we're able to, you know, because of our jobs, we know it's going to be there. I mean, yeah, everybody's got to worry about keeping their job. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to, but when you're a missionary, man.
Well, it's a secondary, you know, it's a primary dependence, whereas us here, it's kind of a secondary dependence in the sense that I have a company I work for, my online company, and I work and I put in a certain amount of hours and I'm going to get a certain amount of pay. Yep. But when you're in a missionary, it's like that person who does the work and gets a certain amount of pay, you're dependent on that person taking some of what they've earned to give to you to do what God's called you to do.
Totally.
That's really stressful. And so that kind of, you know, those realities sort of all contribute to why a missionary, you know, like why I believe and I think why we at Shepherd Staff, you know, promote the idea that there's at least a three-faceted goal or three-faceted structure that a furlough should take when missionaries are back in the States. And so the first one would be, you know, from our angle is that, hey, they do need a vacation.
Yeah.
So church, you know, recognize that the first couple of weeks back, what can you as a body do to provide a vacation-like experience for them? Where they can come back, they can get through jet lag, they can decompress, they can spend time alone as a family, or if they're single people, you know, with the people that they doing whatever they want to be doing, just entertainment type things the first couple of weeks. That's the key initial, say, facet of a furlough. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally makes sense. What's the second one?
The second one is reconnection. And what I mean by that is, you know, God's created us relationally, and a significant amount of time from of the furlough needs to be sort of reconnected relationally with, you know, family members that they've been apart from for a long time, and certainly with members of the church, and clearly with financial supporters. You know, reconnecting with the members of your home church, and particularly your financial supporters, is crucial for your mental health to be able to say thank you face to face to let that person be able to see that their giving is what it looks like played out in your life on the field. And then the deepening that happens as a result when you meet face to face and you can talk about it is just, it's crucial for missionary health and for, you know, the good of those that send and care.
And I would suggest that a subset of that reconnection, you know, if you're gone for a year, even if you're gone for 6 months, you know, the landscape of your church changes.
Oh, yeah.
There's a bunch of new people there that didn't know who you were when your church prayed you out to the mission field. And so there's a bunch of people that are new that you need to meet that need to learn about what the church they now go to supports.
That's right. Yeah. So I guess broadening that out, it would be, it's, you know, a furlough provides that opportunity for connection with new people that may have become members of your church, and then reconnection with the ones that you already knew to just keep those tethers of connection tight. And maybe even broaden them a little bit or deepen them a little bit while you're there. And you know, I think that most people that support missionaries and pray for them, you know, they love the opportunity to get face to face with those that they pray for. And not just to hear like, hey, what are you doing with my money and my prayer?
Right.
but also to spend time with the person. You know, get to know them a little bit more. How have they changed since the last time we saw them? How I changed since the last time they saw me? Those kind of things. All good relational-based stuff.
I think it's a cool thing, Jeff, to, you know, for if you're a new person at a church, which I have become in the last, you know, couple of years, is to see in the flesh, you know, what the church is doing, you know, on the financial side. And to really be able to get to meet the people that the church has dispatched into the mission field and meet their kids and hear the stories and shake their hand. I think that really does something to solidify that, yeah, what my church is doing is a real godly thing and that God is alive and well in the church where I go.
Right. Yeah. And God works through people. You know, the amazing things that my church is doing is done through people just like me, but people that have heard the call and been willing to obey the call to go. And that's inspiring.
Yeah. And you find out that those people are a lot like you. They came from the same kind of a job. They grew up in the same city, you know, probably have family that went to school with you or whatever. I mean, it's like, those are cool things to find out. It's like this ministry thing isn't for like super holy people. Actually, maybe I could do this.
Right. Yeah, it is. It is that. And even if they, you know, obviously God's not going to call most people to become missionaries, but what it does is it can inspire them even, you know, right where they're at. It reminds me of sort of the same principle of Philippians 1, where Paul's, you know, in jail and around like verse 12 of chapter 1 of Philippians, where he says, you know, I know you guys thought that this was a disaster, that I'm locked up, but it's actually a good thing that I'm locked up. God is sovereign. And because I've been locked up, you know, I have access to the Praetorian Guard now. So I can share the gospel with the people that are in power, in positions of power and influence in the kingdom. And there's a lot of people that are much more bold to share their faith because I'm locked up. You know, in other words, Satan thought it was striking a master blow to put the number one missionary behind bars. But actually what it did is it promoted people in the church to do and to be inspired by Paul's example, to get out and do what God was doing only through Paul. And I think that same dynamic happens with missionaries, where even though most people aren't going to be called to go, when they get to spend time with missionaries and hear their story and just sort of get to know them relationally, I think that inspires people, you know, to start looking at their job in a new way and seeing what they do as part of their local church and through their job, their support, their prayer for the missionary, that they really are making an impact.
Absolutely. And hopefully what it does is that, you know, we have this idea that we take our jobs and we put them in a separate category from ministry life. And really, they just all need to go into the same category that we're Christians doing this thing. And when you meet a missionary, and I can think of like my first experience with missionaries, like, man, these guys are no different than me. You know, they like the same music, they like the same movies. You know, it's like they're just regular people. I could do this, right. You know, and I need to be doing this, and my life needs to look like their life.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. 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 And so in that, then, you know, when you're back, besides sort of the refreshing, you know, vacation thing, and then those opportunities that a furlough provides to reconnect, and the good that does for both the missionary and those he's reconnected with is, and this has to be a facet of it too, is reporting, or what I call reporting. And in the sense that, you know, you got to talk about what God's doing over there, what he's let you experience, what he's let you see. And it's interesting because, and again, maybe this is a whole separate podcast, but the idea that, you know, God has hardwired us to not have fullness of joy unless we declare, unless we verbally express that which has provoked our joy.
Yeah.
You know, and so when missionaries come back and they can report to their donors, to their home church, to the people that have been praying for them, to get face-to-face time to report what they've seen God do, man, that there's a completion, like the full cycle of joy is experienced in that. And although that can be done, you know, in a newsletter or an update or on a Skype or a call, doing it face to face over a cup of coffee or in somebody's living room is just powerful, man.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not like the missionary gets to do that every single day when they're out in the field. It's like,
no, they don't. Yeah.
You know, I think of my wife, man, I was so proud of her the first time we came back from Africa, and she got up in front of everybody. And usually, you know, when, you know, in the couple, there's like the quiet person and the, you know, the noisy person. Well, I'm typically the noisy person, and
right.
Yeah, my wife lets me be that. But the day that she was asked to share about her ministry experience, I was so proud of her. And you've had her on this podcast, in fact,
right?
Just having the ability to talk about ministry and just be so relatable, and so this is normal life, gives the missionary a chance to grow in what they're doing. So yeah, I mean, I totally affirm what you're saying.
Yeah. Although that can be done corporately, I think most missionaries, you know, that ability to report in and talk about what's happened, to do that on a Sunday morning service is great. It seizes the opportunity if you get it. If you can do it to a Sunday school class, a children's ministry class, a home fellowship, a men's ministry, a women's ministry, there's something about speaking it corporately that is valuable. Mm-hmm. But I think just the way I'm wired and most missionaries I know, the ability to have enough time to get back here in the States and then spend times with one or two families at a time and really have sort of a reporting in that has an interactive component to it, where people can ask you questions based on what you just told them that you saw or you experienced. And then they can follow up with what's pricked their interest, and you can tell them a little bit more. I mean, there's just something so valuable about that. And again, that level of communication requires some time, mm-hmm. you know, it requires some time. So back in the States, that is, away from the field.
So yeah. Is that number three or number two still?
That's number three. So the first thing is, again, refreshment, sort of the vacation angle. The second thing is reconnecting, which is primarily think about relational. And of course, what overlaps in that is when you reconnect with people, especially on a relational level, there's generally going to be a reporting in sort of component to it. And when those things happen on a furlough, a missionary goes back to the field, generally speaking. Obviously, there's always exceptions. But if there's been enough time for those three things to happen, the missionary is going to go back to the field more than likely encouraged, yeah, tired, but somewhat refreshed and just confident that a lot of people really care about them, care enough to have taken the time to listen to them. And then inadvertently, they'll come to know probably that the people that they met with and talked with are actually encouraged themselves by their visit.
And if they know that they accomplished those three things, they can go back to the field thinking, I knocked everything out that I needed to knock out. That's a great feeling.
It is a great feeling. And you know, so what happens, and I think we may have mentioned this in the first podcast, is because the furlough has been sort of limited to, in most people's mind, just a vacation, And because there is more than just vacation involved in a furlough, a lot of organizations now use the idea of home assignment.
Right.
Which is sort of, you know, we talked about that, I think, the last time. So
yeah, we touched on that. And I've seen that term used in other articles that I've read lately about furlough, home assignment, and it does give a different sort of mental perspective of being home than just being on furlough. And I wish I didn't just say just being on furlough right now, because again, it's not a vacation. The idea of reconnecting with people, I mean, is just crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And getting yourself in front of those people so that, you know, they know, they know what they're doing on their part as, you know, being faithful to the Lord is really paying off. It's just so crucial. It just closes the loop.
Yeah, it really does. And again, I can't emphasize enough that a furlough doesn't just benefit the missionary, but mm-hmm. the church. Mm-hmm. And so as in so many other areas of, you know, walking with the Lord, and especially in missions, it's not an individual endeavor. It's a body thing.
Yep.
And so when a missionary, you know, is communicating with key people in their home church, hey, we're coming back. We want to do a furlough. These are some of the things that we'd like to accomplish. And the home church leaders saying, hey, we're going to help your furlough to go as well as possible. And so there's some things we'd like you to do to meet with people or do this. When it's a team effort, it just, there's a beautiful expression of, you know, of the glory of God unified for this cause that, you know, that represents him properly. Yeah, furloughs are good.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.